All right. Good afternoon, friends, and welcome to the On Par Masters Edition podcast. Pleased to be joined by Golf Shake's Kieran Clark from the other side of the pond. Kieran, how are we doing today?
Oh, I'm fantastic, Anthony. It's been a long time for us to sit down and talk about golf again. It's long overdue, but I'm glad we had the opportunity. And obviously, having witnessed what has been a really enthralling Saturday at the Masters, it was just some incredible golf there. We actually were worried that storms and bad weather was going to ruin the day, but in reality, it was really the players themselves who created the thunder and the rumbles. It was tremendous to watch, and it set us up, Anthony, for what's going to be potentially really, really special Master Sunday.
Well, it has been a while, and again, I concur with your thoughts. I'm happy to be. I'm just glad, actually, that I didn't think to even consider playing Reunited and It Feels So Good as our opening song. That would have been quite disturbing. So I'm glad that that's only just came into my mind as you were speaking. So that's it's one of those opportunities I was happy to miss.
But Anthony, I now know how you feel, and the feeling is mutual, so we can move on now.
You spoke of the weather, and actually we were all very worried about the weather, but I kind of feel like the weather actually played a bit of a nice little hand in giving us the conditions to set up the spectacular golf that we did see, because, we do like Saturday to be moving day, and under normal conditions, Saturday moving day on Saturday at the Masters usually would have been controlled by the Wizard of Oz, that is the tournament director or committee at Augusta National, but that was sort of taken out of their hands a little bit with the weather and the soft conditions, and that allowed players to be a little more aggressive and was able to get a number of guys who sort of, you know, you look at the, forget about the leader, well, if you look at the leaderboard and look at the top six players, I mean, you're looking at 5 under for the day, 7 under for the day, 7 under for the day. Rahm was 7 under for the day. I guess I should have been saying that. Reed was 5, McIlroy 7, Fowler 7, Rahm 7, Fleetwood 6 under, Watson was 4 under. So I fear that had, Augusta National had their way, perhaps we wouldn't have seen the moving day, the spectacular type of moving day that we saw, that we witnessed.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think you can see that. Obviously, the little bit of moisture they had in the morning particularly, it really softened up the greens. And it gave the players, like you say, that bit of freedom to actually be more aggressive. And it wasn't just with their approach shots. It was everything. You know, the chips around the greens were more aggressive, as they obviously, the surfaces are more receptive than what they were in the first 2 days. Because the players in the first 2 days, although we saw some great golf and some really good scoring at times, the players were very tentative at times. And even spoke about that. A little bit of wind was there too the first couple of days. And it made for some very tricky scoring conditions. And had that really continued over the weekend, then it would probably be a very difficult Masters to see a lot of roars and birdies and so on. But obviously the softer conditions, it just laid the stage out for these guys to go there and just be aggressive and have a go, and they delivered. And in the end, these guys are the best players in the world. We're seeing it on the leaderboard. The cream has risen to the top, and they delivered there. And it's funny you mentioned the tournament committee, because before, Fred Ridley, the new Augusta National chairman, he was previously the tournament committee head at Augusta at the Masters for the past decade or so. He's a former USGA guy as well, ex-US amateur champion. So I wonder if perhaps the first couple of days he was sort of putting his little message out there in terms of making this course conditions quite tricky and the pins in some really awkward places. But today, I think it was taken out of his hands, so to speak, and it delivered what's going to be a great spectacle today. But the question is, Anthony, going into tomorrow, the forecast is better. Obviously, Augusta has these sub-air systems in the greens. They can suck the moisture out of it, and they can really dictate what's going to happen. So do you think they're going to let the players go out tomorrow and express themselves and deliver the birdies and roars that we usually expect on a Masters Sunday in the back nine?
I do. I really do. But I think it'll be reserved for the back nine. I think that I think the front nine will be set up to be for a lack of a more articulate word or phrase, I just think it's going to be set up for you to survive. I don't think, you know, maybe you get a birdie at 8 and maybe 2, but I think that they're going to set up the front nine. they want to weed out the pretenders from the contenders on the front nine. And then I think the back nine, I think, will be set up, with the exception of maybe 11. 11 is really hard to sort of set up. You don't want to set up 11 to be easy. Plus, you know that pin is going to be just on the side of the water there. So, but I do think that it'll be a tale of two nines. I do think that the stern test will be forthcoming on the front nine, and I think they'll open up the wings and allow, you know, I don't want to go as far to say let the floodgates go open, but I do think that I think they'll want the Raws to be a big part of the story that is so part of the fabric of the Masters.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. And actually, Anthony, you mentioned the front nine, and it was interesting today that actually how many players, particularly Rory, made their scores on the front today, which is a complete opposite to the first couple of days. And it just shows that, you know, obviously the back nine tends to play a little bit easier because of the holes that they have, but and the more receptive pin positions. But even today, the front nine was actually, you know, playing a lot easier than what it had done the first 2 days. Because the first 2 days, look at that first hole, it was just eating everybody up. Number five was doing the same, but not so much today. So, yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's set up really well. And you mentioned, obviously, the Roars being part of the story. Well, I think a certain Roars could dominate the story, a certain Rory McIlroy tomorrow.
I agree with you.
That was quite good there, wasn't it? That was a nice segue by me there.
Well, you—that's you're two for two in segues. You should do this for a living. I mean, you had the weather segue earlier, and where the players were providing the thunder and the lightning, and so that was.
I must say that the weather one I did plan beforehand in my head.
Oh, you should never admit that. Never admit that.
I shouldn't have said that. I have to be honest with you. But the Rory one was completely organic.
Oh, I love it. I love it. No, I agree. And it's a, you know, the permutations for how tomorrow can play out are a little confounding. But the two biggest ones for me are is this sort of little, you know, I don't know if you want to call it a conundrum. You're the wordsmith, so I'll let you come up with the appropriate vernacular. But you know, you have the history of no player shooting all four rounds in the 60s, and but then you have McIlroy, who kind of went really low today. It's 7 under. Does he still have enough firepower? He's still being three shots back, by the way. And of course, a lot of this is predicated on how Reed plays tomorrow, but you know, does Rory still have enough fireworks left in him, and does Reed be the first one to conquer this sort of historic milestone of shooting four rounds in the 60s? Now, I will say immediately before you respond, if there's anybody to do it, it's certainly Patrick Reed. I mean, the guy revels. I don't know. I was trying to think before we came on and before we connected that. I was trying to think, I don't know, you know, maybe, you know, I was thinking of a little bit of Seve, I was thinking a little bit of Ian Poulter, but, you know, Reed just, I think the more he feels people dislike him, I feel like the better he plays, and he's a much more talented version of an Ian Poulter. Ian Poulter, I mean, don't get me wrong, rises to the challenge, but he has not done so much in the major championships. Yes, the Ryder Cup. But Patrick Reed is starting to show that he's a different type of player than Ian Poulter was by the way he's playing now.
Yeah, I think really, given Reed's performances in the past couple of Ryder Cups, he's become this Captain America figure, which has been almost a little bit of a parody, but he's backed it up with amazing golf. And I think you're right. The comparisons of Ian Poulter have been made because he's been the talisman for the US in the past few years, and obviously Poulter was the case for Europe. But yeah, I think Patrick Reed can really elevate himself above that discussion if he can win the Masters and become defined not just as a great Ryder Cup player, but as a great major champion. And I think we shouldn't underestimate him at all. And maybe people could be forgiven for doing that because Rory McIlroy's there. He was superb today. He's been great all week. He's obviously building up for a potential, really a place in sporting immortality by completing the career Grand Slam. The story is set there, and Reed would be the spoiler, but I think he'll revel in that, like you say. And that's what he likes to defy people. obviously, you know, Reed does brush people up the wrong way. He's not going to win many popularity contests. He has a somewhat checkered history at Augusta State when he was there at college with his teammates and so on. He's not the most popular guy in the world,
yep,
but he's a tremendous competitor. There's so much to admire about his game. And in terms of comparisons, Anthony, you mentioned Seve and Poulter and guys like that. But I think one figure who sort of stands out to me as being like an archetype of Patrick Reed would be Raymond Floyd, who was a guy who was an unbelievable competitor, an incredible short game, perhaps overlooked in his era when he played at the time, obviously, of Jack and Tom Watson, Lee Trevino and so on. But Raymond Floyd won four majors. He had one of the most convincing wins ever,
yep,
at Augusta. A little bit like Patrick Reed, you know, up there all week, rounds, really low rounds every day, and he stormed away to the title. I don't think that's going to happen tomorrow, but I think in terms of a comparison, maybe Patrick Reed is this kind of generation's Ray Floyd.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point and a good one. I think my only rebuttal to that is I think part of the reason why Raymond Floyd it may be forgotten in that kind of character in comparison is that he had that deathly stare. He had that sort of Ben Hogan stare. But Ian Poulter and Patrick Reed are demonstrative. And Raymond Floyd was never like that. And so
that's true.
You know what I mean? And so I think that's where, you know, I kind of split with that comparison, but I like it in terms of on paper, and the way he's won his championships and the way he was with his demeanor, in terms of, you know, defying people. But he didn't have that sort of flair and that demonstrative flair that Patrick Reed and Ian Poulter have.
No, I think that's true. He wasn't really, I think in the end, Ian Poulter particularly is someone who has been a media darling where he sort of puts himself out there for attention. He said some crazy, you know, remember Ian Poulter's legendary quote about being the second best player behind Tiger Woods, and of course they played together at Augusta today in the third round. And of course Patrick Reed has been forever kind of defined by his top five player comment after winning at Doral. So both Reed and Poulter have come out with some big statements through the years, and Poulter, as much as I admire much of what he's done in his career, didn't quite obviously achieve that level. But Patrick Reed obviously is on the verge of potentially reaffirming the confidence he has within himself. And all these players have an immense self-belief because they wouldn't be there if they didn't have that. But some of these guys, of course, very few of them, do like to express it and show it. And Patrick Reed is one of these guys who does that. And whether you like him or you don't like him, for me, he's an interesting figure. He's a personality. Maybe he's a bit of a villain in the game, but I think you need figures like that. If everybody, you know, as much as I respect Matt Kuchar an awful lot, but if everybody was Matt Kuchar, the game wouldn't be particularly interesting as such.
No, but, I did
you know,
pick
Patrick Reed is a guy, you know, he's like Ian Poulter, he's divisive, but for people who like to watch the game and write about the game and talk about the game, you have to have your villains and your heroes, Anthony, and I think, you know, Patrick Reed's maybe a villain, but he's a very effective one.
No, he is. I unfortunately picked Matt Kuchar in Stewart's, pick every major championship and Ryder Cup winner for the year. So I fear I cursed him for this year's Master. I did.
Well, I've got to say, Anthony, I picked Rory McIlroy.
So, oh, my word.
Fingers crossed.
I hope you didn't curse him. But I want to go off on a little tangent because you mentioned an important thing that I think that people that hasn't been, you know, spoken enough, especially by the media pundits, if you watch them. But the idea of self-belief, and I think this is the part of the idea that part of the evolution of the new Tiger Woods that we're watching. The Tiger Woods of old would have I was watching Tiger Woods on a replay of him on 12 today, and he hit the ball on the green, and he smiled and he raised his hands and he made the American baseball signal for you're safe, and he joked around. Tiger Woods of old in his glory days would have never been so self-deprecating in a moment like that, if he were in the same circumstances. And I think one of the things that people, you know, I thought it was absolutely absurd that people from the Golf Channel were saying that they wouldn't be surprised if Tiger was contending. And what I find absurd about it is that the fact is, yes, he is Tiger Woods, and yes, he could, the stars can realign at one point down the future, and down the road, I wouldn't be surprised. But given where he's been and the fragile state of his, I don't want to say his ego, but maybe his psyche, you know, everybody talks about the process mechanically, but there's a process mentally that you have to get ready for. And there's a, you know, and matching up that process mentally with the mechanically is what made him so great. I mean, his psyche and his mechanics were far above anybody else during his reign. And I don't think he can, he can't be the same person he was, not from a statistic standpoint, but just from a human being standpoint. He can no longer be the same person he was. Yeah, he's older. Yes, I understand. But he has been through life, and he has been through, and he's been knocked down plenty of times, to the point where I guess maybe he now feels comfortable being self-deprecating. He's at that age. I mean, I'm not saying he's an old man, you know, not afraid to return soup or anything at that point, but he's getting to that point where he has a much different perspective on life, but he is not ready to contend in a major championship in my estimation.
Yeah, I think it's interesting with Tiger Woods, and obviously there was an awful lot of anticipation and hype, and I can understand it because he has come back and he's defied expectations on the PGA Tour. And you know, really, in the end, 6 months ago, even he wasn't sure whether he'd come back and play at the top level again, and he's done that. He's looked very good at times. He's almost won, of course, at the Valspar, contended at Bay Hill. But there's a big difference coming onto the pressure of a major championship and what these events have meant to him through the years. And in the end, he hadn't played at Augusta for 3 years. And that was when he was physically getting towards his worst. So he hasn't really been feeling like he could actually win at Augusta for a long time. And he would have thought he had a chance this week. And I think even from the first shot on Thursday, he looked tense. He looked under pressure from himself. And I think he wasn't used to that feeling of being under pressure in a major again. Because those events are obviously, for him, massive. That's what he plays for. That's what he's always dreamt of winning. And so even mentally, I think mentally is a long way off where he needs to get back to winning majors. Whether his game's there or not is another thing altogether. And I would go into a deeper discussion about his game in terms of his qualities nowadays, and actually particularly related to the golf course at Augusta National, because I think there's a very strong case that the golf course at Augusta National is nowadays is too tight in places for Tiger Woods the way he plays now.
Yep.
I think they did successfully tiger-proof the golf course. It wasn't to do with the length, it's to do with the extra tees, the trees they put on in some of the holes. And off the tee, with a driver in hand, he's not consistent enough. He can't hit the draw shot on particular holes, the par 5, number 2, number 13, and he's consistently played those holes poorly for several years now. Even when he was still finishing in the top 5, he still fell short of the leaders for that reason. And I think there's even a case to be made that Phil Mickelson's getting to that level as well, where these guys, the golf course isn't the same golf course that they won on a decade ago, or even longer. You know, Tiger won 13 years ago for the last time. And so maybe time in that respect is kind of passing those guys by on this golf course. I still think both of those guys can still win elsewhere, but maybe not here, which might come as a bit of a surprise to people given the records that they have. But with Tiger, I think where he's come from to where he is now, it is fantastic to see him back in the game, but still there are big question marks as to whether he can, you know, reach that next level. I think he could, but the evidence, obviously, it's still early days. And obviously, he's got the US Open, the Open, the PGA this year. He's exempt for all those events. He'll be playing in them. So I think, really, for Tiger Woods, we can't really judge where he's at from the Florida swing.
Yeah,
we can judge that, I think, more so at the end of this season.
Yeah, well, yeah, I agree. And as far as Phil Mickelson, you could see the panic in him on the front nine yesterday. There was a guy who was coming in extremely confident, really he was playing well, gets a win under his belt in Mexico, does all, you know, he ticked every box that he wanted to do, that he wanted to tick. coming into that to this Masters. And you throw on, for sentimental value, the fact that he had his brother on the bag and could have said he won his last Masters with his brother on the bag, and it could have been this whole, you know, Jack Nicklaus, Jackie Nicklaus, you know, little mm-hmm. story. All of that, you know, just, you know, it sort of, it just became too much. And when he faltered on the front nine on Friday, it just seemed to me like pure panic, where he was immediately chasing shots. And don't get me wrong. Now, this is, you know, I was thinking this yesterday, and so not knowing that it was going to be soft and people were necessarily it was going to be soft enough for everybody to go super low, but I was like, you know, if you just got back to even par, you know, you never know what could happen. And if he had just fought back to getting back to even par, he would have, you know, at least given himself half a shot. Now, granted, his game was going somewhere else because he was really struggling. But the point is that he just started panicking and he made it really worse. And that it just seemed to exasperate everything else in his game.
Yeah, I think that's true of both Phil and Tiger this week. They both looked a little bit flustered right from the start. Even when, obviously, Phil had got off to a really good start on Thursday and was doing okay in the front end on Friday, but then it sort of fell apart, like you say. I think, but these two guys, you know, the icons that they've been, the legends that they are, you know, there's a reason why throughout time players of their age and experience don't win majors. It's a rare thing. You know, Jack Nicklaus winning at 46 was an extraordinary feat. And even though the game has moved on, you kind of laugh and say that Phil seems younger than what Jack did in 86, and Tiger looks great for 42 and so on. But the game, you look at the way Rory McIlroy and Patrick Reed and Ricky Fowler and all those guys played today. Right now, Tiger Woods is so far from that level. He's not anywhere near it consistently. You know, Phil, I think, obviously showed in Mexico he still has it. But it's doing it. Phil had waited 5 years for a win. He contended several times. He'd been lucky not to win the Open in 2016 at Troon. But, you know, time for these guys, the window is kind of narrowing. But it's interesting because I always, kind of the pre-narrative, which we all love for Augusta every year, the hype and so on, was about how it's going to be a sort of convergence of generations. You know, Tiger, Phil, even Bubba, you know, I know he's only 39, but he's obviously a slightly older vintage than some of these other guys, going up against the young players of today, really the generation that Tiger inspired. And it was all set up for that. But what you're seeing here, I think, this week is, with the exception really of Henrik Stenson and Bubba Watson, the young guys are kind of shutting the door on the older guys, saying that, no, we actually are the one, we are the present, not just the future, we are actually the present right now. And Patrick Reed, Rory McIlroy, and Fowler and so on, and John Rahm particularly, you know, these guys are, they're marvellous. They're marvellous players, and they have a confidence behind them as well. I think Phil and Tiger particularly can take almost a bit of credit for how good these guys are. But they are great, and they're showing it why they're so great, and maybe to an extent they're sort of extinguishing the hopes. It was funny, Anthony, it's kind of a side point here. We seem to be all about nostalgia these days. You know, everybody's obsessed with the 80s right now. You know, I mean, if you ever watch Stranger Things, it's just a rehash of everything from the 80s.
Sure.
There's a new Spielberg movie, Ready Player One. Yep. This is the same thing. We all love the 80s. It's
I was listening.
Star Wars coming back.
I was listening to Sirius XM.
Sorry, there you go.
Yeah, no, I was saying I was listening to Sirius XM this morning on the way to the studio, and I was listening to the 80s series channel. So,
see, you're part of the problem. Everybody's obsessed with the 80s, so we're all kind of hearkening back to the past. And I think a lot of people in the game, around the game, you know, of a certain generation, they all grew up watching Tiger and Phil and so on, and particularly Tiger, and seeing them back, potentially going to be a winner again. We all want to sort of recapture the feelings of 1997 or 2005 and so on. And it's interesting that these young players, I think, this week so far are, to some extent, kind of extinguishing those nostalgic memories. And so maybe the kind of the Tiger Phil hype, as much as they've done well this year and probably surpassed expectations, maybe a lot of that anticipation and talk was more out of wishful thinking than anything else.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's get to the leaderboard here, and let's just make this decision right now. Are we discounting the rest of the leaderboard? Is it fair to say that at this point we think it's Reed and McIlroy? Are you ready? Are you ready to? Are you ready to make that? Are you ready to make that? Are you ready to go there?
I'm not ready. No,
you're
no,
not ready.
We've seen so much happen, Anthony, down the years. You know, I can't make that statement. I can't rule out, you know, Ricky Fowler or John Rahm. Obviously, it would take something quite incredible for that to happen. They have to go out and really replicate what they did today, you would expect. Can you see both Reed and McIlroy struggle? I don't think so. Could one of them struggle? Yes. And everyone thinks it's going to be Patrick Reed. But in the end, like you said at the start of the show, if Patrick Reed breaks 70 again, he's going to be at 17 under par. It's 8 shots ahead of Ricky Fowler from where he's starting. So, yeah, Patrick Reed, it's on those two players. Obviously, with the way the course plays, and they'll be very aggressive, and, you know, obviously Fleetwood and Stenson and Rahm and Fowler behind them, they'll go out all guns blazing, going for every pin, trying to be aggressive, trying to make shots and whatnot. So the guys who can really extinguish that early will be Reed and McIlroy. And you remember when McIlroy was 4 shots ahead in 2011, and he gave the field instant hope and optimism by the way he started, and obviously eventually he collapsed around the turn. And Rory today spoke about that in his press conference and his interview afterwards, where he said that, you know, that was that round that day, that struggle he had 7 years ago, that made him able to win major championships, as of course he showed by winning the US Open just a few weeks later. There are no guarantees here. You know, that golf course is, as I always say, it's beautiful, but that beauty kind of masks a danger. There's a potential for disaster at Augusta. We've seen it through the years, but also a potential for greatness. It allows great champions to stand up and make their mark. And what Rory McIlroy has done this week is do that. You know, that putt in the last, that was such a decisive moment. Even if it was only a Saturday, to get within 3 shots, it's... I think we want it to be the McIlroy Reed finale, like it was at the Ryder Cup a couple of years ago. How incredible that was!
Yeah.
But you never know. Maybe Ricky Fowler. You know, obviously he's a guy that's contended so many times. Everyone talks about him. He's a big personality. People love him. Hasn't quite backed up maybe consistently in terms of wins. But if he was to go out and maybe this post a number, you never know. But I think the likelihood is it's going to be McIlroy and Reed, and if we get matched, you know, in the end, Anthony, it's like. What I always say is, what you either want in a major is you either want to have tons of guys in contention on leaderboard, birdies left, right, and centre, volatility. Like that, actually, the year that McIlroy collapsed and Charles Schwartzel had 8 guys tied for lead at one point, I think it was. Or you want the head-to-head, the Stenson, Mickelson, the Troon. So either or, when it becomes match play or when it becomes a shootout, that's what we want. And I think right now, what's more likely to happen, like you say, is that match play situation. And if we do get that, then it's going to be incredible. But as McIlroy said in 2016 in the Ryder Cup, they started level, all square right at the start. Reed's got a 3 shot lead, and yes, that can change quickly, but it's still significant, and it still puts pressure on Rory to have to come out and try and make something happen if Reed doesn't make a mistake. So it's going to be really, really interesting from a strategic and a kind of mental strength standpoint as to what happens tomorrow. So the first few holes are going to be so crucial for both of them, not just for Reed, but even for McIlroy. Right from the start, it's going to be really, really fascinating. But can those two guys give the field encouragement? Well, I'm not so sure.
I have less commitment issues than you do, so I'm saying right now.
I'm late in the day, Anthony. I'm tired. I can't beat. I'm too indecisive. I'm sorry.
I'm saying it right now. It's a Reed or McIlroy. I'm just saying. There's just no way. I mean, you know, Fowler doesn't have any pedigree for this kind of stuff, and that course is a big course. I'm not saying he's short, but you know, he's got a. It's just I don't see it. I just don't see it from him. Rahm potentially yes. Even Bubba Watson, I mean, you know, can really dominate a golf course with his length. I know Fleetwood's is a flusher, but I just don't see it. So I'm fully committed to a final pairing champion, as is the history of it, and not just because it is the history at the Masters, where the majority will hear that stat 1,000 times. It'll make you nauseous tomorrow, but there's just no way. Given the caliber of the players, the history of the players, of them in general, in big spots, in terms of the Ryder Cup, and who they are and their personalities and where they are in their careers, I don't see. I just don't see it. I'm giving nobody else a shot. a shot tomorrow.
Okay, Anthony, can I just go back then and discount that 2 minutes of waffle I gave there and just say that?
No,
I agree
it's
with
on
you.
Record, man. No, it's already done. Stuart's already laughing and rolling his eyes.
I didn't mean it. I was just trying to mask my true feelings. Yes, it's going to be a shootout between Reed and McCoy. One of those two guys is going to win. And I'm going to go one step ahead, Anthony, and say the guy who's going to win is going to be Rory McIlroy. There you go. I'm being
oh, my God. Now. See, that a boy. I'll make you a New Yorker yet.
I feel better now.
You feel better, right? Isn't it? It's liberating, isn't it?
It is. It's a relief. Yes, I feel good.
That's what the On Par podcast is all about. You know, it's golf and therapy at the same time. Your idea is that based on the fact that you feel that Rory has nowhere to go but up and Reed has nowhere to go but down?
That's a really interesting way of putting it, Anthony. And I think, you know, what Rory said after his round today was he said that he's going to go out with the attitude tomorrow that he has nothing to lose and everything to gain, and that Reed is on the opposite end of that spectrum where he's obviously he has to sleep on that lead. It's a long, long wait until the tee off tomorrow. A long night, you know, dinner tonight, trying to get a good sleep overnight, or early morning routine. There's a lot of thinking time there. Well, and yes, Reed's a big personality and all the rest of it, but he hasn't done it. Rory's won 4 majors, and we kind of forget that. You know, I think people forget. We talk about how, you know, we talk about all the guys now, Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson and so on. We forget that Rory McIlroy is, by really the historical record, the greatest player of his generation. And I think tomorrow he's determined, he's confident. What he's done really effectively is he's played great, but he's also scrambled really well this week. He's held the putts when he's had to. His timing's been really good. And so much about sport at the highest levels about timing, doing things at the right moment. He's done that so well. And it's kind of reminiscent of his major wins. And I think he's in the best position he's been for a long time to win one of these events. And there's a kind of a redemption angle there too from 2011. But in the end, the Rory McIlroy of 2018 is not the Rory of 2011. I think we're seeing the Rory McIlroy of 2014 when we felt that we were actually going to get a Rory McIlroy era. We didn't quite get it. Who knows? Maybe tomorrow is going to be the start of that. And if he completes the career Grand Slam, you know, he's one of the all-time greats right now.
I'm going to go as far as I'm not only going to give you the winner, I'm also going to give you the headline. You ready? Rory McIlroy is going to win, and the headline is going to be Rory loses the battle and wins the war, because he lost the battle at the Ryder Cup, but he got the major championship, and that's really what they really want. So there's your winner.
I like the sound of that.
There's the winner.
And of course, another thing as well, Anthony, is if Rory McIlroy wins at the Masters tomorrow, it will continue what's been a great run for European winners again at Augusta. You know,
Danny
Willett there, Sergio. You know, it's funny because, you know, obviously the American players have been doing well at the top of the world rankings of late, but you know, the European guys are coming back resurgently, and even obviously there's a great kind of second card of players like Fleetwood and Ram and so on, but the top guys, you know, Rory coming back and winning would be just massive. And what I always say about Rory, Anthony, is even when he was not being at his best, I've always said that Rory, whenever they play to their best, Rory McIlroy wins. I think he's still the best player. We haven't seen, particularly last year, much evidence of that. But this year, I think we see, even at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, where when he's at his best, he just makes, nobody makes golf look better than Rory. He has the way he swings the club, the way he plays, the shots he can do, also the natural swagger that he has as well. There's something about him, he has that real unique star quality. So I think it'd be huge for golf if Rory was to win tomorrow. And it'd be a wonderful story. And it'd be great. It'd set him up for what could be a really, really incredible next chapter of his career. Because, you know, Rory's still only 28. We forget that. He feels like a veteran compared to, like, Spieth and Thomas and the guys even younger than them. But Rory's still, by historical terms, a young player. And much can happen. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really compelling day tomorrow. And whatever happens, it's going to be a remarkable story. Because, you know, there's no bad story on the leaderboard. And that's what we want to see. But in the end, that's what the Masters delivers, because it's a very elite field. The top players are there, mixed in with a bunch of guys who, frankly, will not win the Masters, like your former champions and your amateurs and so on. So
right.
The cream always rises to the top here, because that's what you have, the best of the best. and consistently they deliver, and I think tomorrow has all the potential to be a real classic. So yeah, what was it you guys say over there? I'm amped, I'm pumped. Is that what you said? I'm pumped up for it. Well, I'm up for that. Yeah, bring it on.
All right, don't ever say that again on this podcast. All right.
I know, it didn't sound like kind of needed it. That's all right.
I agree with you. And you know, you speak of, you mentioned poor Danny Willett. I feel bad for the guy. I feel like I'm waiting for him to come out of witness protection. That poor guy. But golf is hard. I mean, it's you look at Trevor Immelman, right? Won the Masters. Gary Player
Mike
said,
Weir, yeah.
Yeah, Gary Player said that Trevor Immelman had the best swing in golf ever. And before you know it, he's off the grid in witness protection, and like so many other guys. But even Mike Weir won. You know, he won a green jacket, but then he also took down Tiger in the President's Cup. I mean, he had a little more of a career than Trevor Immelman.
So
Danny Willett to my point. The Euros are having a nice run at Masters, so enjoy your time while you can. And you know these things are all cyclical, and it's so funny. It's just so funny that how people ride the wave, right? You know, it's just crazy.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned obviously the former champions there, and yes, Danny Willett missed the cut at Augusta for the second straight year.
Yeah.
He hasn't made it since he won there. And then you had Sergio Garcia, who of course he was a joint last professional in the field. He was joint last with Marco Mira, who of course retired from the Masters on Friday. So in terms of the winning the Masters, you know, they've all had an incredible year, but the guys who have won it recently have come back and they've had some absolute shockers there for a different reason.
Yeah.
I don't think Sergio will quite go the way of Danny Willett, but that was even with that disaster on the 15th, that was still a really rough 2 days for him.
I don't mean to say this. I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but I loved everything about 15 because it just shows you how it's just a window into Sergio's soul. And the guy is so defiant, right? You know, he did things he always does his things his way, and he was just going to stand there and hit the same shot over and over until he did it. I mean, it was truly, you know, the tin cup moment. But that's who he is, and I don't mean that I love that he made a 13 or whatever he made. I love that it was just a window into his soul. That is who Sergio Garcia is. He will stand there and he will do it over and over until it's done. I mean, that's just his personality.
Yeah. Well, it is, and it's why, you know, again, Sergio is a big personality in the game.
Yeah,
he's someone who not everybody's a fan of necessarily. He's done some silly things in the past, but he's an incredible player, and he's an interesting character. And I also think the game needs players like him
who are
mercurial, where they do things that are brilliant, but then there's always that little switch in their head that goes off, and then it's a disaster.
Well,
I think that's why people love Phil Mickelson so much.
Sure.
The same reason where Phil is so incredible, but there's always a chance he's going to do something completely unexpected too.
It was almost like Sergio was like, you know what, this pin is in a ridiculous position, and it's so on the razor's edge that I'm going to show you that how ridiculous I think this pin placement is, because I'm going to put, you know, four, five shots.
Well, I think he was right
in the same,
right?
But that's my point. That's who he is. He's like, this pin's ridiculous, and I'm going to keep hitting the ball basically to the same spot, and just so you see how ridiculous you guys are for putting it here. That's who I think he is.
When Sergio made that 13, and then just to get a mention of my compatriot in here, the great Sandy Lyle, about 15, 20 minutes after that 13, eagled the 15th. So Sandy Lyle made three at the age of 60, and Sergio Garcia made 13. So that's a little snippet for you. I quite like that in a way. No offense, Sergio.
No offense taken, I'm sure. He's got a lot more wonderful things to worry about than the On Par podcast with Anthony and Kieran.
Well, actually, you say that, Anthony, but did you see the controversy around Rich Lerner making the joke about how
I did.
They won't name their second child after Firehorn, the name of the 15th hole, and then Sergio's wife, Angela Atkins, I must say, somewhat took it a little bit too much to heart, I think, what he said. It was a joke, but they took it a bit too seriously, I think.
100%. 100%. Ridiculous. You know, this oversensitive, this I don't know. You know, this is the world we live in. You can't joke around with anybody. You can't, you know.
Everybody's offended by everything.
Everybody's offended by anything. Yeah. I hope we're offending people as we speak, actually.
You're offending me.
Yeah, but I'm trying to offend you. I mean, that's the difference.
That's true, and you're very effective at it.
But, you know, I just think it's ridiculous. The comment was meant as a... You know, I'm not even sure it was that funny, to be honest with you, but the bottom line is it was meant to be funny. And and the fact that they're commenting on children that are not even born, it's just ridiculous. And let's not forget the lack of perspective that they have. You know, we're not going to end this on a down note, but you know what? If you're blessed to have a child, and I don't mean that in any kind of religious way, but I do mean it that, you know, if you're lucky enough, maybe that's a better word to say. If you're lucky to have children, mm-hmm. then, you know, be happy with the children that you have, because you don't know, God forbid, if you can have something happen, you don't have another child or whatever the case may be.
Yep.
Like, you know, like, so why are you commenting and being offended on things that aren't even happened yet? It just speaks to the ludicrousy that the world has turned into. How about that?
Okay. Well, there we go. Everybody, listen to this. The Masters podcast has turned into Anthony's sort of rant here. That's quite amazing. His speech against modern society. Yes, I happen to agree. I think that it was a completely over-the-top reaction from Mrs. Garcia and also Mr. Garcia. I think... Sergio, they're just get married. They've got a lovely little girl.
Right, exactly.
Sergio's a Masters champion. They've got more money in the bank than they could ever spend. Why are you getting offended by some guy off the golf channel? You know, come on.
Exactly. I mean, you have nothing better to do than to be outraged by a joke that really wasn't really off color, so to speak. I mean, it was. You know, you may not have laughed. I mean, and how hard would it have been to just said very funny or LOL or, you know, and just moved on with your life, you know.
You can comment on it. Just ignore it.
You're right. Or just ignore it. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, Sergio has to go into his little rant about how he handled it like a champion. And you know, I was just like, it's just absurd. It's absurd. All right. Anyway. All right. So that's it.
Anthony, just quickly there before we kind of wrap things up here. I must say that still, even though the Masters has been incredible and fantastic and it has the potential to be a great Sunday and hopefully it delivers, I must say I still hearken back to Wednesday's par 3 contest and that moment with Jack Nicklaus and his grandson.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
That's still the best thing I've seen this year.
Well, no question. It's better than anything that could... honestly, it's probably better than the ultimate winner of this championship, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, unless something extraordinary happens, you know.
Yeah,
and I mean,
pure magic. I love the reaction from Jack Nicklaus, how emotional he was. It was one of those moments that you just think that, anyway, if you're divine intervention almost. It was an incredible moment and perfect. And it was another great Augusta National memory for the Nicklaus family, and there have been one or two of those for the years.
I mean, imagine being with your grandfather and 2 days or a day before you're talking, and you know, like, oh, you don't worry, you I'll make sure you get a shot on whatever hole, and you know, what if you get a hole in one, and that's basically what they did. They were talking about it. They mm-hmm. joked about it, and then the kid does it. I mean, it's just it's mind boggling. Is really what it is. It's absolutely mind boggling.
I thought he was older than 15. He's a big boy, isn't he? My goodness, he's
I didn't even know he was 15. My gosh.
I thought he was like 22. But the thing is, you know, Jack has actually commented in the past that he has, you know, I don't know, but 30 grandchildren practically these days.
Yeah.
And almost none of them play golf. Well, he's got one there. So he's one star, one golf prodigy right there. So I'm sure that makes him happy. And the kid's got a very good golf swing, and he also apparently likes to sing as well, so he's got multi-talented.
Yep, he is. All right, well, I think we've covered all the bases. I think it's just about time to wrap things up. You've heard it here now. You've got Reed as McIlroy as your winner over...
McIlroy, yeah, come on.
I'm sorry, I was just looking at the leaderboard, and I still don't see anybody coming out of those two, so don't worry about it. I'm not changing my mind. But yeah, McIlroy is your leader.
Looking forward to Henrik Stenson. sense in having the green jacket tomorrow.
And and I look forward to seeing my headline on golfshakes on golfshakes.com.
I'm going to write that down, and I'm going to keep that there, and I'm also going to write down my thing about the weather again, because that's quite good. So I'm going to do that again.
You'll have to. You have to listen.
I'm impressed by my own skills. There we are. So
you have
no
to.
No one else is. I'm easily impressed by myself.
You have to listen back to the On Par podcast just so that you can get your material for the have some of your material for the tomorrow's articles. It's gonna. I love it. I love that I'm making a contribution.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Well, Kieran, always a pleasure. I am always a pleasure to be in your company and to have a chat with you. And yeah, we were reunited, and it does feel so good. So there you have it. I'm glad to have you back on the podcast, and I'm looking forward to many more tournament reviews.
Well, don't leave it so long until the next time, eh?
I know.
We're not going to be young forever, so come on, make it sooner next time.
Well, maybe I have commitment issues too. Who knows? Kieran,
decisive. That's the mantra. That's the lesson from this podcast. Be decisive with your predictions. McIlroy will win the green jacket and make history. There you are.
That's right.
You heard it here probably for the 800th time, but there you go.
Kieran Clark from golfshakes.com. Kieran, thanks a lot. Have a great night, buddy.
Thank you, Anthony. Pleasure.
Take care.